Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by Community Radio WERU 89.9 FM Blue Hill and at weru.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's episode, we meet Mainers who craft for good. We will be inspired by Rosa Moore and Jackie Perkins from the iconic Home Co-op in Orland, from Belfast Area High School art teacher Heidi O'Donnell, and Midcoast makers Jillian Liversidge and Sarah Brand New. Welcome, Rosa Moore and Jackie Perkins, to Creative Maine. You are severally the executive director and the arts and activities director of Orland's iconic Home Co-op, and you're perhaps the best local representation of crafting for good. Crafting has been an integral part of Home Co-op's mission, I know that. Can you describe Home's mission and maybe your origin story as you go along?
Hi, Adina. Nice to hear from you. Yes, so my name's Rosa, and Home Inc., I've been here at Home Inc. for 15 years, only a small portion of its 55-year history. So today, our mission is focused around honoring the dignity of people experiencing challenging times by providing safe shelter and other critical resources in a vibrant and more mutually supportive community. And by mutually supportive, we mean we're creating spaces where people have the opportunity to not just, you know, say, get the bare minimum basic needs to get them out of whatever crisis that they're in, but give them the depth and the surrounding support that helps them in a moment of chaos or in their lives. So we've been here for 55 years doing essentially that work. We actually began as a crafting cooperative in 1970 after the closure of some facilities or some job sites in the area. There was a need for people with really skilled They were skilled in shoemaking, and they needed somewhere to sell their crafts. And Sister Lucy Pullen came together with a group of many other people in the community and was able to found this project where we began with a craft store and crafting studios to help people learn crafts, give them space to do crafts, and in a way to earn income from that craft. And then over time, we've grown to support people who may be going through situations of homelessness. We've built housing. We have food service portion of our work and thrift stores. So reclaiming the value of things, through those activities. So it's a lot of different things, but the arts and crafts have always been really at the heart of Home. It's what brings us all together into the space and gives these kind of unique creative areas where people can just go a little bit beyond that surface and get to know each other.
Do you find that some of the residents have never done any work of their hands before? Is that a part of the healing process for them?
Yes, I find that a lot of the residents that we have here in the shelters, they really haven't, they're almost afraid of art because they don't want to make a mistake. Sometimes that happens. Mm-hmm. but we provide this space where you can go in. It's a safe space. We have places where you can come in and work individually. We have four studios where they can go in. We have quilt making, pottery, stained glass, and then we have a living art studio that has a little bit of everything. And they don't necessarily have to come in as a group. One person can let us know we have schedules, and they can book a time where they want to come in and just get away from some worries in their life and just be able to create something that they made themselves. And once they realize that there is no mistake in art, that's my opinion, sometimes the mistake is the most creative part of it. They really flourish in that. And a lot of the guests at the shelters really find that that is a place where they can heal and feel safe. And then also I have several that have been creating things that because part of our mission is to find a home for people once they're here, is to find that, create something that they can put in their new home. Mm-hmm. And have a memory of how home here, our home, Home Inc., has helped them reach that goal.
So handmade items have had a very important place in your mission. And in fact, it's seminal, I would say. So why do you feel, we know why art and craft are so important for some of the reasons that you just mentioned, but do you feel that from an institutional standpoint, they speak strongly to philanthropists and donors who keep the institution going? How do you feel that looks to the outside world?
I have always found it to be something that breaks down barriers. So sometimes it's challenging to know or to be able to start a conversation. I'm especially awkward in those beginning moments. So when you have something that is so beautiful and new, or something that you can pull together as a focal point, it's a little bit easier to bring us all to a common ground. And so that's one thing that I really love about this part of our work, other than that, I also just love doing pottery myself. So that's a personal passion. Yes, I think it's been part of kind of breaking down barriers for us and bringing together populations that might not otherwise have the opportunity to speak to each other or be at the same table.
Mm-hmm. And just have a little piece of Maine and just that creative community that we have here in Maine. And Maine has always, in the United States, people look to Maine to, when they come here, to find a handmade item when they are a tourist, or if you live here, you want to put handmade things in your home. So that's just part of.
That's always appealed to me about Maine, it being a craft culture. And that's one of the reasons that we decided to come this way. It was quite compelling. So ladies, tell me a bit about you. What are your journeys to get to this place? How did you wind up at Home Co-op?
Yeah, so I actually am from Maine. I grew up here. I grew up in Western Maine, but I went to school at the University of Maine and knew about Home back in the late 80s, and was connected to it certain ways through friends and things like that that had utilized some of their programs. But I moved to Arizona in my early 20s and lived there for 20 years and moved back here in this part of Maine because my grandparents lived here to help take care of my grandmother, and saw that Home was hiring. And I did a lot of, in Arizona, I worked with adults with disabilities for 20 years in an art program as well, where we did a whole holistic learning and community-based services where we would work with artists with disabilities, and they would go out and we would go out in the community and teach other people what we learned. So I did that for 20 years, and then I came here and I read about how they needed people here and started out as a shelter aide, working part-time because of taking care of my grandmother, but evolved into being able to work with the arts crafts part of it because that's my background and that's what I went to school for as well. And I love working with people. I'm just doing it in a different way now. But I always found art is a healing process. So that's where my background comes from.
Very good. Rosa, how about you?
Yeah. So for me, it's I think that home has kind of always been there. So I'm trying to think about that. My parents came to home in the 80s, and they were taking some of the classes that were provided at that time. And so I was in the daycare when I was little. And then, but as a young adult, I experienced a period of homelessness, and home was there for me to provide me the community that I needed in that moment. And since then, they, you know, after that, I was offered a job in the pottery studio, which, you know, over time, this was, I think, 2010, gave me the space to build myself up, to give me confidence, and to give me the community I needed to support myself, to support my family, and then eventually be able to give back to people who needed it. So it's been really a wonderful experience for me, sort of an evolution of my life and my career.
Yeah, sort of defining for you. It's been a central point. Talk to us about some of your craft initiatives. You know, we're coming up to the holidays. It's a season of giving, and I'm interested in the place that crafting has had in bettering the lives of communities in Maine. And I know that the co-op has some initiatives that reach beyond its property. So what are you doing right now as an institution?
So with the Rees, we have one of the goals of that is to provide a source of income for individuals here in mainly Orland area with tipping and making the Rees. We have women that go out and do that, and then we pay them to make the actual wreath. And then they bring them into us, and then we work with different individuals that are volunteering with us to make the wreaths, and then selling the wreaths go back into the community, into our programming, you know, the crafting and the shelters. And it's a wonderful way to be in with a group of people decorating and having, you know, part of the holiday season, and then providing something beautiful for somebody to take home. And it's made by people that care.
Yeah, that's great. What other things do you do?
We'll have, you know, a lot of Christmas items. And then in this winter part, we close down and then have some pop-up activities until May. So the pop-up activities center around the different holidays that might be happening, like Valentine's Day and St. Patrick's Day, mm-hmm. and things like that, Easter. And so those are really great opportunities to come in and buy something and get to know the store and the spaces. In May, we open the store back up for the summer to December. May to December is when it's open. And we have an activity that's called Pathways to Creativity, and where we have the studios open. People will be doing demonstrations in each of the pottery studio, the stained glass studio, as well as we usually see if we can get somebody to come in and volunteer to sing and bring forward some other people who might be in the community doing different kinds of crafts. Or we had somebody last year, I think, doing therapeutic massage. It's a great day to come out. So that'll happen again in May. And then over the summer, one of the big events that we have is the Empty Bowls event, which is a lot of coordination around the crafts, where we create, I think we did 400 bowls this year, which are just, it's a great opportunity to support our program, and you walk away with a nice ceramic bowl at the end.
So the idea of the Empty Bowls is you create a bowl and thus provide money for the soup kitchen. Is that how it works? Or
the fundraiser specifically for our soup kitchen, where we utilize our crafting spaces to support that fundraiser by it's a symbolic kind of thing where and an opportunity also for volunteers to come in, and people who might be interested in
making bowls, they could come in and help make the bowls for the event. So we have the bowl and people pay an entrance fee. They get soup, they have music, and generally a good time. And we usually have a little bit of an auction with like gift cards and other types of crafts that we've done at the same time. So it's a great opportunity to support. And then this year, we brought back an historic event called Voices by the Fire, which was it's a bonfire in October. And we have essentially empty mugs at that event. So we're giving out, or you buy a mug and you get hot chocolate. So
yeah.
So.
Plus it's a creative process for people to sing or tell a story. So we had a stage and we had pumpkin carving and hot cider and all these wonderful things going on, face painting. So it was a wonderful community event that was free. But if you wanted to, you could have a mug and buy one if you wanted to, but you could also have it in a cup if you couldn't afford to or whatever that.
Might. Sure. Sure. Oh, that's fun. Very fun. So how can our Creative Maine listeners find Home Co-op? How can they participate in some of the initiatives or just the fun times? Where does one go?
Yeah, so we're located in Orland, Maine, at 90 Schoolhouse Road. We call it the Home on the Hill. There's a blinking yellow light right now. You can also visit us at homeemausa.org. That is homeemausa.org. That's okay. Our website.
Okay.
And you can call us at 207-469-7961. We're also actively on Facebook with lots of different posts almost every day. So I think one of the things I should say is that our programs and activities and our studios and are not solely for guests in our shelter. They're also for community members. So there's opportunities there for both getting a monthly membership to our studios, or maybe just coming in and paying for a class.
Or coming to one of the pop-ups.
Coming to one of the pop-up events, or also just taking part in the community. We have lunch here at the soup kitchen Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 12. And so it's a great opportunity to come in and just get a feel for the spaces. And Jackie's generally here Monday through Friday, so she'd be happy to introduce people to the studios and mm-hmm. just let people know what we have available for them and how they can participate in the work.
Right. Well, that sounds wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Rosa and Jackie. This has been a very interesting conversation. A lot of things I didn't know about Home Co-op, which is literally a mile up the road from both me and the WERU studio. We're all in one neighborhood. So thank you again. Have a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. Very productive and successful. And I'll look forward to talking with you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for having us.
We appreciate your time.
Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. The Bagadoose Chorale presents three performances of their winter concert, One Perfect Moment. Hear them at the First Congregational Church of Blue Hill on Friday, December 19th at 7:30 p.m., Saturday, December 20th at 7:30 p.m., or on Sunday, December 21st at the Alamo Theater in Bucksport at 3:30 p.m. For more information, visit bagadoosechorale.org. The town of Eastport, Maine celebrates New Year's Eve with the 21st annual Great Sardine and Maple Leaf Drop, a community-wide celebration featuring performances at the Eastport Arts Center, special dinner offerings, open galleries, and arts and crafts activities. At midnight across the way in Canada, or 11 p.m. Eastern, the maple leaf drops, and at midnight, the sardine drops. For more information, visit tidesinstitute.org. Enjoy the special event, Gardens Aglow, at the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens in Booth Bay, Maine. Open until January 3rd, one can experience nature in motion. For more information, visit mainegardens.org. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU 89.9 FM and on WERU.org. Next, we chat with Heidi O'Donnell about how her students craft for good. Welcome to Creative Maine, Heidi O'Donnell. I'm so glad that you agreed to come on the show with me. You're an art teacher at Belfast Area High School, and I'm curious, what specific art subjects or media or practices do you teach?
I am currently teaching a few different courses. I teach Crafts 1, which is a foundation course. I teach a Crafts 2. If they really like it, they can continue on. I teach a ceramics course, Photo 1, which is all analog photography, and then Photo 2, which is all digital. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I've taught art foundations, painting, printmaking, sculpture, even yearbook. So,
wow, all the things.
All the things.
So how about you? What is a bit of your creative journey? How do you wind up teaching every art subject there is at a public high school?
I think that my journey became real when I was in fifth grade. I had a very inspirational art teacher who gifted me a brand new, like wrapped in Cella wrap, 50 oil pastels, like nobody had ever touched them before. And it was an award for some contest that I won that I didn't even know I was in. And the joy I felt from getting that reward was just like, I need more of this. So I was always creative. My family's creative, even though they say they're not. And I love working with students. I love sharing what I have with students, but I also really thrive off of what students give me when they do something for the first time, the excitement, the process, and it helps me feel younger. And I consider myself a lifelong learner. So this is just like so many things coming together in such perfect harmony. It's fantastic.
Did you ever teach the younger grades at all?
I had 1 year of elementary school, and it was not for me.
I know. I don't teach littles myself. I teach high school.
I tease my high school students all the time. I truly enjoy teaching high school. I thrive on it. It's fantastic. But I have a special place in my heart for seventh grade. So I taught middle school for many, many. This is year 30 for me. And I think almost half my career included some kind of middle level teaching. And I loved every second of it.
It's interesting. So, and different subjects are good, better on different levels, I guess. I taught music to fourth graders and loved it. But when I got to teach JMG, I couldn't deal with the middle schoolers. It's funny. it's weird. So, well, great. I noticed when looking at some of your materials that you're a director of the National Art Education Association Fiber Arts Makers Interest Group. That's quite a mouthful.
So I'm a couple different things. So I'm very involved at the local level and at the state level and at the national level. So at the national level, I did serve as the Eastern Region Vice President, which was a great opportunity. When I stepped off the board a couple of years ago, there was an opportunity. There was a group of people who were interested in fiber arts. They brought the idea to the delegates assembly, but the people who brought it were not able to bring it to fruition for a variety of different reasons. And so when I heard the reaction at the delegates assembly, I was like, okay, I can take this on. This can be my wheelhouse. And so I found a colleague and we both brought it to the delegates assembly. Now we have a fiber arts makers interest group, which is a subgroup of National Art Education Association.
That's amazing. What does that look like in terms of translation into the classroom?
Because this is the first year, there's not a whole lot because we literally were approved in the spring and we are still gaining memberships. I'm very excited to say we're over 100 now, which is pretty unusual for an interest group. And we've just started doing a little bit of social media and we're going to meet together in person in Chicago in March. But what is amazing about this group is that we have a lot of art educators across the United States who are participants. Some of them are student artists who are like becoming art educators. Mm. Some of them are teachers in the classroom. Some of them are museum educators. Some of them are higher education. And we will all share and collaborate and work together to strengthen fiber arts in the classroom.
Oh, I'm all about that. That's wonderful. Kids see me knitting, you know, in study hall or whatever. And it's like, what are you doing? It's amazing what they don't know.
It is amazing what they don't know. And I think that it's important for fiber arts, especially because craft historically used to be separate disciplines, weaving, knitting, ceramics, and it was separated from fine art, like sculpture, painting, et cetera. But nowadays, I think that those lines are more obsolete. In the contemporary world, there are contemporary artists who are fine artists who are practicing all those things. And I just think it's great to lift that so that more people are aware that it's not just a little Pinterest craft or whatever. It's a true artwork that they're making that can be political, that can be, you know, deals with complex issues, maybe environmentalism, identity, narrative. So.
Oh, yes. All of it. And that's a whole discussion we can have another time because, you know, the line between art and craft, people can argue about that interminably, but we won't.
And my students like to argue with me too. And I always win.
Yes.
Not always, but I try.
That's a very good point. But no,
yes. Yeah,
that's right. So our emphasis in this particular program is on crafting for good. Mm-hmm. And one reason why we are talking today is because you have a very interesting initiative with your students, which I think you've had for a while now. Mm-hmm. You've been doing it. It's called the Empty Bowls Project, isn't it?
Or is it? But I want to clarify.
Yes, go for it.
I personally am not the creator of the Empty Bowls Project. The Empty Bowls Project is actually a powerful international grassroots effort to fight hunger. Mm-hmm. We, at our level, so I have a National Art Honor Society, and part of being in the Honor Society is service. We use that vehicle to contribute to the community here in Belfast. So we support the Belfast Soup Kitchen through our efforts hosting the Empty Bowls Project.
Okay. Now, this is deep. So describe to me how the mechanics of this works.
My National Art Honor Society students, one of their service requirements is to make ceramic bowls. We've had people donate bowls before. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes local artists will donate bowls. But we essentially have a group of bowls made with all kinds of levels of ability, because sometimes we have younger students come and help out. Once the bowls are made and they're glazed, we host an evening where the students serve soup and bread, and folks from the community come in. They purchase a bowl with a meal, right? Simple meal, soup, bread. And what it does is they are able to keep the bowl, the community member, as a reminder of how many empty bowls are in our community right now. And they helped in their small way by making this purchase and donating. 100% of the proceeds go directly to the Belfast Soup Kitchen. We don't keep anything here.
Belfast has its act together, I have to say.
I do know there are other schools that do it here in Maine. I can't name them, but I'm not the only one. But we have been doing it for, I think, 15 or 16 years. It's been a minute.
Mm-hmm. How much money do you typically raise in an average year?
It is varies significantly, and sometimes it varies on the weather, and sometimes it varies on the timing. But we've made as little as $350-ish, and we've made as much as like $1,300. So it really, and I have to say that as of late, that number has dwindled some in terms of people coming in to the building. I postulate that possibly part of that is because of COVID, and then people are not engaging in the school community as much as they used to in the past, but mm-hmm. that has since been, it's been a few years and we just haven't been able to kind of bring it back. So this year the students were like, and it costs a lot on the students because the students make the soup, they bring in the bread. So, and they're not financially reimbursed for that. They make that at home and they bring it in. So this year they were like, let's try ice cream. Everybody wants ice cream. I think we'll get more people to come. So we're going to give it a shot and see how that plays out.
Wow. So make it more of an ice cream social situation.
Yeah.
Very
it will
fun.
Have a different feeling to it. But I think that I like to go on what the kids are excited about. And this is their organization. So I want to support those ideas. So we'll see how it plays out this year.
So that brings me to a point, actually, which is, as a teacher, why do you feel, and you clearly do feel, it is important to teach students about generosity through their own making the bowls, making the soup? What makes this kind of philanthropy kind of qualitatively different from somebody coming in and just writing a check? What are you teaching them?
So I think that writing a check is abstract giving. It's indirect. It's transactional. There's no object as a long-term reminder. And it's very administrative. I have some money. You need some money. Here you go. And then we wash our hands of it. When the students are involved in the creating, it's direct. It's physical. There's an emotional link between the maker and the recipient. Even if they don't physically meet, like they know that somebody has their artwork someplace in their home. So the gift is labor and skill and time, and they're sacrificing all those things to support their community. So, and the person who receives the bowl, they get that physical reminder of like, I made an impact. And I think that that human-centered process is really, it increases their sense of social responsibility. And I like to let my students know that they are socially responsible for the communities that they live in. They are part of those communities. We want them to support their communities, especially for those in need, because they might themselves find themselves in need at some point.
I was going to say, some of them may have actually in the past or even in the present.
I was going to say, there are some students who have been in my National Art Honor Society who are in need of those services. So we don't make that public, you know, but students understand what's going on. And I think that they really appreciate that they're part of making the community feel supported.
Absolutely. I think it's very important. And you're right. When the community member has that physical bowl, they have a bit of the heart that the student put into it and the intention that the student put into it.
Yeah.
Yep. That's lovely. Do you engage in other acts of giving with your students?
We do. We annually participate in Arts Advocacy Day, which happens at the State House. And so my personal National Art Honor Society creates the ceramic pins that say support arts education. Mm. And on Arts Advocacy Day, we go, or some of our students go to the State House and we talk with the legislature about why the arts are important, and it's an advocacy tool. So they're like, there's a gift. Like, we had this conversation, here's a pin that you can wear and know that we need support. This is relatively new. I'm having the students create cards and they are gifting them to staff and administration just in appreciation for what they do. And I tell the students that most teachers, we don't need a Dunkin' Donuts gift card. We don't need a mug. We don't need a thing. But to have the students spend the time, create a card and write a message fills our hearts with so much joy. Like, it's yes. way better to me. Like, I don't need a gift card to anything, but if you're going to write a letter and say, thank you for being a rock star, I'm going to hold that in my heart for many, many years. And I'd show the students sometimes, I have a box of all these letters I've gotten from parents, from students, from community members, that whenever I'm having a really hard day, I just open that box and I'm like, I know why I'm here now. And so they're doing that.
Yes. It's a very JMG thing to have what we call an attitude of gratitude. And, you know, and saying thank you for some reason is difficult for some kids. I don't know why.
I think they're not in the habit. I don't hear so much about kids having to write thank you cards at the holiday time or birthdays. I'm like, they're in the habit of going back and saying, I really appreciate what you've done for me. And whether it's a physical thing like a gift or whether it's just like the support you have given me. Yes. And I agree. They don't do it as much or as well anymore.
No,
they certainly hate talking on the telephone.
They do. It's crazy.
It's
Tell us how our Creative Maine listeners can find you, find the Empty Bowls event, help the students, and participate in some way.
So people can contact me through the staff directory on the Belfast Area High School website. They can reach out to me via email that way. That's the easiest. If they want to find ways to help the students, if they're a local ceramic artist and they want to donate bowls that we can add to our collection for this night, that would be great. The reality is that a lot of times what we need is material items to support the sustainability of that. So it kind of goes against the making of things, but monetary donations earmarked for empty bowls would always be greatly appreciated, because that money would go directly into offsetting costs for food, for clay, for glazes, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And if they want to participate, I try really hard to have it posted in the Pin Bay Pilot. It goes out in our school newsletter, which I know is more like of a controlled audience as opposed to diverse. And then when I can, I put it on the social media. Like either the Facebook or the Instagram or whatever.
So they can help maybe serve or sell or...
The students do all the work. So they would come and be recipients of bowls. They would come and enjoy a meal and have a conversation with students. And yeah, that would be the best support, because then they are also supporting their community.
Okay. So do you know offhand the URL of the high school?
I believe it's rsu71.org.
So it's RSU71. Perfect.
It's RSU71. It's a quick Google search, and you can also Google Belfast Area High School, which will take you directly to the Belfast Area High School website.
And then it's Heidi O'Donnell is
Heidi O'Donnell, yeah.
And you can help them in any other way. When is the next event?
So we haven't set a date. It's typically in March. We try to do it the same evening as the music, the band chorus performance. And I don't know that date right now, but March is typically when we have run it in the past.
Okay, perfect. Well, we'll put it in our community calendar here and make sure we signal boost the event. Well, thank you so much, Heidi O'Donnell. This has been delightful, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
And I am grateful that you reached out to me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Welcome, Sarah Brand New and Jillian Liversidge. You are here on Creative Maine representing the Belfast, Maine area's Best Crafting for Good initiatives. And as Sarah, as a member of the Heavenly Yarns team, you are central to fiber crafts for good in our community. So please tell us a little bit about some organizations that you're involved with.
So Jillian and I ended up creating a fashion show about 16 years ago, and it was really an excuse to get everybody's work on a runway so that we could see everyone's work in one place and see what people are creating. And we figured we could make some money for a good cause via selling tickets. So we created Knit Mania, I think it was about 16, 17 years ago, and that's an annual event. And it has raised money for several organizations, New Hope for Women, HOME, GBAM, Habitat for Humanity, the Soup Kitchen. And it's fun because people can participate by modeling or by putting their stuff in the show.
Cool.
If you like clothes or knitting, it's a really fun event.
That sounds great. So why do you feel that handmade items have such an important place in this mission? Why are arts and crafts so important?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I think it's multifaceted, honestly. I feel as though when you're knitting, you're creating, putting your intention and your love and your creativity and your sense of color and a whole lot of yourself into your pieces. But it is also such a communal experience when you're knitting with other people, and it wraps all of that together and it becomes more powerful and meaningful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason why we've also seen all of these prayer shawl initiatives and caps for cancer and the, mm-hmm. the breasts, the nitty knockers. I love that one. The nitty knockers for breast cancer survivors. There are so many fun ways to support and create. And it's healing for everybody.
And it makes much more of an impact than just sitting down and writing a check, although there's no shade on that. But when you've done it yourself, like you say, intention, that's very important. So tell us a bit about each of you. Sarah, you have to talk about your name because it blew me away when I
came by it, honestly.
Her name is Sarah Brand New. And when I heard that, I said, oh, what a clever tagline. But no, it's your actual name.
Yes, I grew up with the last name of Brand. And whenever anyone asked, how do you spell Brand? I would say, it's like brand new. And lo and behold, there was a gentleman who grew up with the name New. And when anybody asked, how do you spell new? He said, N-E-W, like brand new. And when I first laid eyes on him and found out his last name was New, my mind immediately leapt to marriage and hyphenation, which I ended up succeeding in pulling off.
Great. What a great story. Okay, Jillian, I'm sure you don't have a story like that, but what are your positions in the craft community, each and severally? And what were your particular journeys to get into this place that you are in? And how did you meet each other and become, quote, partners in crime?
Great question. So I started knitting as a child. My grandma, all of my aunts, my grandmother, my mother, everyone knit. My mom also was a crocheter. There was a lot, you know, I'm a product of the 70s and 80s. So there were a lot of crocheted toys, knit sweaters, knit mittens. So that's where I got my beginnings. I then you know, dropped knitting in high school or middle school. I don't exactly remember. And started knitting again when I got a teaching job at a school in Portland, and everyone was knitting at faculty meetings. Not everyone, but about 30%, I'd say there was a good portion of people knitting. So
that's big.
It was really fun. And so I started my buddy, my mentor was the art teacher, and she said, "You've got to knit." And so she took me to the yarn store. And of course it was, that was it. I was in love. I could play with color. I could satisfy my creative, artistic self. And I just flourished, because once you start, if you've got the knitting bug, once you start and you realize what the possibilities are endless. You can play. It's a canvas for me. Mm-hmm. And there's so much fun yarn and patterns and people connected with it. It's more of a win-win. I mean, it's just perfect. It's meditational. It's great skill. You can create tailored gifts. You can tailor clothes to properly fit you. So many benefits to it. And it's a great way to pass the time. So I'm rambling on, but I do want to tell the stories. So fast forward, I had been knitting with pals, and then I moved to this area, to Stockton Springs, actually. And our daughters at the time were 2 years old. And there was a toddler play group in Belfast at St. Margaret's Episcopal Church. And that's where I met Sarah, at toddler play group. And I knew I was immediately in love, because she was working on knitting a floor length fuchsia skirt. And I was new to town. You have to figure, I didn't have any friends at all, really. So it was perfect. There were all these beautiful elderly women taking care of our daughters. And we were sitting there knitting and becoming fast friends. So that's
to interject here that Sarah is famous for her floor length dresses that she wears. Every stitch knit by herself. And they are arresting. They are stunning.
Thank you. So,
anyways, I'm sorry.
You've got to have something to wear to Hannaford.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can I say one quick thing? If you want to see some of these dresses, you can visit Knitmania. We have a Knitmania Facebook page. That is our fashion show, Knitmania. It is not up to date, but we do our best. But there are lots of photos from past shows. And if people out there in the audience want to get a taste of what we're talking about and the bug, you should go look at some of our photos, because they really tell the story.
Can you please spell Knitmania for us?
K-N-I-T. It's one of the M-A-I-N-E-I-A. So it's the words knit and the state Maine and then I-A.
Gotcha. Okay. So this month in the season of giving, we're interested in the place crafting has had in bettering the lives of the communities in Maine. And in fact, you mentioned that you donate to Home Co-op, and they are also represented on the same show. So you'll hear them. Please discuss the craft initiatives in more detail.
Yes. Knitmania led to our having knit-a-thons twice a year at St. Margaret's Church. And I will be honest, it was really an excuse to sit there for 12 hours and knit. And you raise money by either getting sponsors or making a donation. So we've been doing those for many years, too. And the money from those also goes to some of these organizations. And this year, the church has a cedar chest in the hallway. And so we said, anybody who wants to make a hat for the cedar chest can do that. And those are given to people who need them. So people also spent that time doing those projects, hats. Mittens can be given at any time during the winter to any elementary schools in Maine, because there's always a need for mittens so that kids can go out on the playground. There's an organization called Knots of Love that takes NICU blankets and hats, and they have parameters regarding that. And you can find Knots of Love online. You make the blankets and hats and send them in. There are those who do prayer shawls. So I would say those are the main ones that we have come across in the community. I have to say it's a very generous community.
It is.
I'm staggered by people's generosity.
Absolutely. I have Belfast well represented on the show also, because I interview Heidi O'Donnell from the high school who does the Empty Bowls initiative.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
So absolutely. It's a wonderful place, which leads me to a question about Heavenly Yarns. Now, Sarah, you are an employee of Heavenly Yarns. Yes. And have been for quite a while, I think.
7 years. Yeah.
And it's been a center for knitting and crochet on the Mid-Coast for decades.
Yeah, 20-something years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this makes it a very important social center. And you mentioned getting together and having an excuse to sit for 12 hours and knit with people. But I would say you've gotten the right job for that. Absolutely. Not that you sit around and knit all day, but you're in that milieu. Uh-huh. So we refer to that in our jargon as an LYS, which stands for local yarn shop.
Yes.
So can you speak a bit, both of you, about the importance of an LYS or a local yarn shop to a community?
Yeah. I learned to knit when I was 25, and I'm sure that I went into my local yarn shop every single day when I was working on my first sweater, which was my first project, my first knitting project. And when you drop a stitch or you don't know which way you're going, you really need a pair of eyes that can read the knitting project to fix your mistakes, and even if it only takes a couple of minutes. So those experienced knitters are an amazing resource. Also being able to see the yarn in person and to talk about projects and patterns and things. And I have always said that we're standing on the shoulders of giants here in Belfast, because there are so many experienced knitters and shepherds and weavers and dyers and spinners here, as well as felters and crocheters. So, I mean, you can really learn any fiber art, and the local yarn shop gives you a place to go and ask questions. And then we also have a knitting circle that meets on Tuesdays from 4 to 6. And that's a good time to come and sit down. And Jackie Otino, who's the new owner of the shop, she put a couch in the middle of the shop so people can sit and knit and get help right in the center of the action. And of course, Helen was super welcoming, and Helen was the previous owner and the founder of Heavenly Yarns. And she really supported all the projects that we were doing as well.
Right. So link that welcoming space to what you do with Knit Mania and Knit-a-thon and all the other.
Yeah. So we meet people at the yarn shop.
Pardon me.
We invite them to the knitting circles, and then they start coming to the knitting circles, and then we invite them to put their stuff into the fashion shows, which they do. People also donate yarn. Like if somebody has leftover yarn from a project, or they have too big of a stash or something, we accept yarn donations either at Heavenly Yarns or at St. Margaret's Church. And therefore, if people show up and they're trying to learn for the first time, or, you know, they want to take some yarn to visit someone and teach them how to knit, this yarn is free. So there's free yarn, free needles. People can learn on that yarn.
And it's so great, because it's recycling the materials.
True.
What was the other thing? There was Knit Mania. There was the Knit-a-thon, and Knots of Love. Was that it?
Yeah, Knots of Love is an organization that I literally heard about last night, because a woman at the knitting circle at the yarn shop was telling us about it. It's called Knots of Love. You can find it online, and they collect knit blankets and hats for NICU babies.
Okay, so I would like you to talk about how our Creative Maine listeners can find your events, participate themselves in some way, whether they knit and crochet or whether they don't. You can assist, I assume, in the success of these events, even if you don't knit or crochet. So tell us all the places you can be found.
I'll tell you the knit circles. There is a knitting circle from 4 to 6 at Heavenly Yarns in Belfast on Tuesdays. There's also one at the Lincolnville Library on Tuesday afternoons. There's one at the Stockton Springs Library on Tuesdays from 6 to 8. On Wednesdays, 3 to 5, the Belfast Library has a knit circle. Every third Thursday, Anodyne Bookstore has one. That's in Searsport, and that's 1 to 3. St. Margaret's Church in Belfast has one on Friday from 3 to 6. And on Sunday, the Blood Moon Studio in Searsport has one from 2 to 4. So you could literally find a knitting circle every day of the week. And people
That's amazing. That's a great way to spend your time, hopping from knit circle to knit circle.
Exactly.
I got to rethink my retirement.
There you go.
I look forward to it.
I just wanted to mention that we have had multiple individuals who have moved to this area and have said expressly that part of what drew them to Belfast in particular, or the surrounding area, was the presence of Heavenly Yarns and the thriving fiber community. They literally moved to this area because of that.
Yeah, Belfast has Heavenly Yarns, Belfast Fiber Arts, Searsport has Fiber College, right? And Blood Moon Studio. And then there's also the Fiber Shed, which works to promote sustainable practices for fiber production.
Can you throw a couple of URLs at us too?
Okay, so Knit Mania Fashion Show Facebook page, St. Margaret's Church. You can contact them for information about the events, like the fashion shows, the knit-a-thons, and their knitting circle.
Yeah, which is stmargaretsbelfast.org. stmargaretsbelfast.org and heavenlyyarns.com.
Heavenlyyarns.com. Okay.
Pause there. I don't go to their website. I walk in the door. Why would I? But actually, that brings up a good point. They do also sell yarn online.
Oh, yeah. Heavenly Yarns has a great website.
All right.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you have been so much fun to talk to. And I wish you a wonderful year of knitting and crafting and fundraising for all these wonderful causes. Thank you so much, Sarah and Jillian. I appreciate it. Thank you so much to my lovely guests, Rosa Moore, Jackie Perkins, Heidi O'Donnell, Jillian Liversidge, and Sarah Brand New. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on WERU.org for another eclectic episode on Thursday, January 15th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when we will learn about some phenomenal photographers of Maine. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson, wishing you a warm and meaningful holiday season and a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.